This is WHTC in Holland. Time now for Talk to Town, the program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls. Our Talk to Town number 395-1450. Our guest this morning, Attorney Nathan Box, and I should say, I said yesterday that Ruth would be here talking about AT&T. That will be next week, okay? So, good morning, Nathan Box.
Good morning, Juke. How are you doing this morning?
Very good. Very good.
I can talk about AT&T if you'd like. I'm a customer.
Well, we got some other things to talk about, like you're head of the Tulip Time Board, right?
I am the head of the Tulip Time Board, and it is full steam ahead. The tulips are going to be absolutely perfect. All of those rumors about a hard winter and their snow being still being on the ground, don't worry about it. They're going to be great.
They're good.
Yeah, I even have them blooming at my sprouting at my office already.
Oh, really?
We've got little sprouts coming up at the office and various spots throughout downtown. They have been sprouting, which is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
And we actually, if people remember, I think we're going to actually benefit from the fact that this has been a cool spring. Most years at tulip time, the tulips are just finishing up. And that there's even been talk over the years about, well, maybe we ought to move the festival up a week or two to try to take advantage of the fact that the tulips bloom pretty early. And I think that we're finding this year that that would probably not be a good idea. But if we get a decent amount of relatively warm weather between now and the festival, I think we're going to be
fine.
I do.
Yeah.
And I'm an eternal optimist, but I also believe that those first couple of weekends of Tulip Time, we've got the King's Day Criterium coming up already on April 27th, so that's only about 6 weeks away.
Yeah.
My guess is those are going to be the first really nice weekends of the spring, and all of those of us who've got cabin fever and are dying for something wonderful to do outside in the warm weather are going to swarm to Holland on those last weekends of April and the first weekends of May, and our biggest problem is going to be, what do we do with all of the people? I think that's really where we're headed this year.
I think we've got room for them.
We do. It's last year we had the first official weekend of the festival. There were cars lined up all the way out to the highway. People trying to get into Windmill Island, people trying to get into downtown, people trying to get to Centennial Park. And I'm really have this gut feeling that same type of thing is going to happen this year.
I know a lot of people, and even a lot of tours, will come, will say, well, we'll go a couple days early to avoid the crowd.
They do. It really depends with those motor coach groups. It depends on whether they're interested in seeing a parade or not. And a lot of times if they're saying, well, we're not interested in coming on the parade days, we'd rather come and see the flowers, we'll oftentimes guide them toward those earlier days of the festival to try to get those in. And my understanding is motor coach groups are doing really well this year. We're getting quite a few of those. Bill Cosby, of course, is almost sold out. I think that there are a few tickets up in the rafters that are still available for Bill Cosby if you're still interested in seeing that. But there are actually quite a few shows that still have tickets available. And we're not concerned about that at all at the festival, because we know that the locals generally do not buy their tickets until after spring break.
Right.
That they like to wait until the weather breaks. They like to start thinking about spring once there's not snow on the ground. But I think that the lineup of entertainment that we have this year is absolutely fantastic, and those tickets are going to start going really quickly. So for those people who are thinking, well, yeah, I would like to see a couple of shows during the Tulip Time Festival, good idea to get online at tuliptime.com, or you can go down to the office, or you can even call into the office and get tickets. And my advice would be, get them sooner rather than later.
Right.
Because once spring break hits, our phones ring off the hook. And we're going to be selling tickets like crazy.
And the Tulip Time program is out now.
The Tulip Time program is out. I first saw it online. We are moving very quickly with the festival to moving as many things online in this new high-tech digital age that we have. And I was sent a link to it with a PDF, and I was looking at it. The first place I saw it was on my phone. and so it's available electronically. It is available in print. I know I'm going to get this number wrong, if anybody's listening at the Tulip Time office, they can call and correct me, please. But I think that we printed almost 250,000 of those.
Really?
Yes. We send out Over 100,000 of them. We've got a huge mailing list of people, and there are a lot of people that still like the print version. I like to think of myself as a modern guy who likes the electronic versions. I try not to carry around too much paper with me if I don't have to, so I really like the fact that it's available online through our website, but there are still the print versions there, and it's absolutely gorgeous this year.
Well, we know an attorney's time is valuable, so let's get this commercial off for it, and then
left the scene unharmed.
Boy, you never see that happen.
That's because it doesn't. If you see abuse or neglect, learn what you can do from American Humane at BeHumane.org.
All right, we're here with Attorney Nathan Box, and if you have a question, a legal question, you can call us here at 395-1450. And what did you have in your mind this morning, Nathan?
I've been doing spring cleaning. As I said earlier, I have cabin fever, I think, like the rest of the community does. I'm itching to get for the weather to get warm. I'm itching to get that garage cleaned out, and I'm starting to think to myself. I was thinking to myself, what do I need to do for spring cleaning? What are those kind of annual things that you need to look at, and what really should people be thinking about from a legal perspective? And I was thinking, okay, you've got all of these documents that you collect over the years. You know, the old canceled checks. Luckily, banks aren't sending those out as much as they were before, but we still have those. We still have our bank statements, we still have our financial records, we still have our tax records. And I get calls all the time, how long should I keep those things? And especially, it's still tax season. You know, that's April 15 is coming, and people are gathering those records together. And I think they tend to think to themselves, you know, how long do I have to keep this stuff? When is it safe for me to get rid of all of these records that I have? And while I'm not a tax expert, so if you've got a specific tax question, please direct that to somebody who knows more about income taxes than I do. But in terms of being able to keeping your tax records, the IRS recommends that you hang on to them for 7 years.
Yeah.
You can be audited for 6, so hanging on to them for that one extra year is a good idea. And when you're looking at things like bank statements and other financial statements, generally what you want to do with the bank statements, we say hang on to them for a year unless you need them to be able to support your tax records.
Uh-huh.
You know, if there's something in that bank statement that you need to support a tax return from the last 6 years, you're going to want to hang on to that bank statement. Otherwise, it's fine to just keep the past year's statement for tax purposes. Same thing goes with other investment account statements. You know, if you've got a broker statement, something to do with your 401k or your mutual fund, usually what we say is no need to hang on to the quarterly statements. You can just hang on to the annual statement on that. And any other financial records, you can usually just hang on to them for a year for tax purposes unless you need them to support those tax returns. Now, that's looking at it from a tax perspective. As an attorney who helps people with Medicaid and nursing home care planning, I'm not happy with just a year's worth of records because the look-back period for Medicaid applications is 5 years, and Medicaid wants to know what you've been doing with your financial affairs for the last 5 years, essentially so they can determine whether or not you have given things away in the last 5 years. And so I encourage people to actually hang on to those bank records and those financial records for 5 years so that if you do end up needing to go into a nursing home and need to apply for Medicaid, that we've got those records readily available. That's one of the issues that families often have when we're putting together a Medicaid application. Is I say, hey, you know, we need to get 5 years of financial records, and their eyeballs get really big, and they say, are you kidding me? We got to find 5 years of records. Luckily, a lot of banks are holding on to things electronically, and you can oftentimes download that information. But it's not a bad idea. It doesn't take up a lot of space to be able to hang on to those financial records for the last 5 years. And if you're a little bit tech savvy, and my folks are in their 80s and they have one, you can get a scanner and you can scan that financial information in and store it in your computer as a PDF. And then it's there, and it doesn't take up any physical space at all. And those scanners have gotten very inexpensive. They've gotten very easy to use. I see commercials for them all the time that, you know, Neat makes one. Fujitsu makes a wonderful scan snap that I use. And you just push the button, and it stores it in your computer, and then it's there. So from Medicaid purposes, you know, and I would say if you're in your 60s or older, probably a good idea to start hanging on to those things for 5 years or longer for those types of financial records. What about the paperwork that is related to the purchase of your house or other real estate? People want to know how long they need to keep that. Well, if you own the house, keep the paperwork. If you've sold the property, you don't need to hang on to it past the time that you've sold that property, unless, again, you need it for tax purposes. But, you know, I've had a couple of houses over the course of my lifetime. I don't have the paperwork from my first house anymore. I decided to purge that information. What about your estate planning documents? You know, what about your will? What about your trust? You need to keep that information. Keep those documents until they have been updated. And generally, and this is a question I get a lot of times, well, this new will you're going to put together for me, that's going to make the old will go away. Yes, it is. We always put a statement in the new estate planning document that says it replaces any previous document, and any previous document that I did is revoked. But the problem that can occur is if you keep the physical old version of it, somebody may find that old one and think it's the most recent.
Right.
And so you want to get rid of those physical copies of the old ones.
Tear them up.
Tear them up, burn them, throw them away, shred them, get rid of them. We don't like those old versions to be around anymore. Well, what about the will of somebody who's passed away? You know, Uncle Jim died and we never had to go to probate with his estate because he did things right and had a trust, but we've still got this will and this trust, and Uncle Jim's not around anymore. I've had to probate wills that are 20 years old or more. The person's been gone for that long. So I like people to hang on to those old documents, even though the person has passed away. Keep that old will. Do you need to keep the old powers of attorney? Nope, you don't. Once somebody passes away, the power of attorney dies with them, so there's no need to keep that power of attorney for medical care. There's no need to keep that power of attorney for financial matters. But you want to keep the will and the trust, and it's a good idea to hang on to it.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, you want to keep on to the, keep track of this for
one
more time.
Take a moment out here for some weather.
Sure.
And then we'll be back with our attorney. And meanwhile, if you have a question for him, you can call us here at 395-1450.
That weather's all 70s and sunny, right?
Not quite. This is the weather, and it's brought to you today by our friends at the Wooden Shoe Restaurant. Have you tried one of their giant homemade cinnamon rolls lately? Boy, doesn't that sound good. The weather, partly cloudy and windy with steady temperatures in the low to mid-40s, and that does sound pretty good today. Snow showers late tonight, though, and a low of 28, and tomorrow's snow showers early with a high of 34, and Sunday mostly cloudy with a high of 25. So it's cooling off again, but today enjoy the hot temperatures.
I will take 40 degrees, no problem at all.
Anytime. We're at 43 right now.
I can take that. I'll tell you, it's so much nicer out there now than it was yesterday.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah.
Some of the other documents that people are concerned about, what about contracts? You know, if you've got a contract for something, say the purchase of a vehicle, you've got loan documents, you need to hang on to those until, if it's for a vehicle, for instance, you want to hang on to that as long as you own the vehicle. And you want to hang on to information regarding that vehicle as long as you own it. If you've got a contract for something, you want to hang on to that contract until it is either completed, you know, all of the terms of the contract have been fulfilled on both sides, or until it's been amended. You know, if it mm-hmm. has been changed at all, you just keep the new version. You don't need to keep that old version of it. And any other documents that are out there, essentially what you want to be thinking of is this document still in effect? Is there something that would still need to be done in regard to this document or this paperwork? And if not, it's generally a good or safe idea to get rid of it. If you're not sure, if there's any doubt in your mind at all, hang on to it because it doesn't take up that much space.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we got a call here. Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Yeah. Do you know anything about Medicare?
I know about, are you talking Medicare or Medicaid?
No, Medicare.
I do just a very little tiny bit with Medicare, but feel free to go ahead and ask your question, okay. And I'll see what I can do for you.
David Carey's been talking about this for the last month or so, that under the new rules, you have to be admitted at midnight in the hospital and stay there for 3 days. Otherwise, they will not pay.
And I'm not familiar with that rule because I'm not doing as much with Medicare.
Yeah.
But David Carrier's here on the weekend. He may be able to answer that for you.
No, well, he said that's a new rule that you have to be admitted at midnight and stay there for 3 days in order to get coverage for it. So
Just
something that people might want to be aware of, too, if because I think he's kind of up on the Medicare stuff and everything. So that's my comment. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Not a very good rule, but...
No, it's you know, that they have to draw a line somewhere, and that's with any program. I know that has to do with private insurance as well, that there are always rules about what they'll pay and what they won't pay. Yeah. And I remember when my kids were born, that when the first one was born, the insurance company was interested in paying for, I think, 2 days. And when the second one was born, they were only interested in paying for 1 day. You know, that they're always changing and looking at what's the shortest amount of time that we can pay for, because it's expensive. It really is.
Yeah. Well, they're going to do a surgery on the run, you know, and just walk in the door and they start.
Exactly. They want you in and out of there as quickly as possible. And frankly, as a patient, I think you want to be in and out of there as quickly as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. I know I had a knee surgery. They did the surgery in the afternoon, and they had me out by that evening with, you know, a big cast on my leg. And I thought, didn't I just walk in the door? I'm out of here so quickly.
Good morning. You're on with our guest.
Yes. I think that gentleman didn't quite understand what David Carrier said. It doesn't matter when you're admitted during the day, but when they figure the 3 days for your Medicare so that you can go to a nursing home, they count the midnights. You have to be there three midnights.
That makes much more sense.
The days don't matter.
Yeah,
okay.
That makes much more sense.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and that goes back to what we're saying, is that they need to have some set deadlines on when they're going to pay and what they're going to pay for and what constitutes a day.
Well, it used to be if you went to the ER that if you were admitted, then you didn't have to pay for the ER.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it goes back to setting some sort of standards so that they can look at what's happening and determine what ought to be paid for and what ought not to be paid for with those systems. And that's an area that I don't deal with as much. I do on the Medicaid end with the nursing home care planning, but I don't do a whole lot with Medicare. And people confuse those two programs quite a bit.
It's very easy to confuse.
Very easy.
Good morning. You're on the line with Nathan.
Hi. So I think I understood the last woman to say that this has nothing to do with paying for the hospital costs. This has to do with being able to get 2 weeks free at the nursing home.
And again, this is an area that I'm not 100% up on, so I'm going to be very careful about what I say here. But my understanding of what you're saying is it is the determination of when you are there or how long you are there is based on the number of midnights that
right,
you're there.
Right, but it has nothing to do with paying for your hospital costs.
That I can't tell you with certainty.
I'll
say that in a non-lawyerly way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. What? You don't know?
I don't tell my kids that I don't know everything, but there are some things that I just don't know.
Thank you.
You're very
Thank
welcome.
You. All right, 395-1450. If you have a question for the attorney this morning, we'd be happy to try and answer it.
Yeah.
And our line is open.
And I think what we ought to talk about as well is, so you're going to get rid of documents. You've got tax records that are 8, 9, 10, 12, 20
right.
years old. You know, should you just throw those in the trash? No, don't do that. You know, you want to get those documents shredded or torn up or... you want to make sure that they are completely illegible and unusable by anybody that's out there, because a lot of those documents will have Social Security numbers on them, they will have account numbers on them, and you don't want to give people a free ride with your financial information.
Good morning. You're on the line with Nathan.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Oh, I'd like to ask the lawyer a question.
Yes.
Sure.
We have wills, my husband and I, and we've had them for quite a few years.
Okay.
And we have a daughter and a son on there as executives for the will.
Mm-hmm.
And now we would like to change the daughter to another son. And do we have to go through a whole new will in order to have that change?
In this day and age, that probably makes more sense to do. It used to be we would just do an amendment to a will called a codicil. And you would attach that to the previous version of the will. With computers and word processors now, it is generally much easier to just do a brand new one. It's much faster and more cost efficient to do that than it is to just do a codicil to a will. And how long ago did you do it?
Oh, it was in the early 80s.
Okay, so it's likely that previous version is not on anyone's computer system anymore. I was going to say, if you'd said, oh, it was 10 years ago, I'd say if you went back to the attorney that you dealt with initially, it may still be on your computer.
He isn't in business anymore.
Okay, that answers my question as well. Yeah, if it's relatively recent, I usually point clients back to the previous attorney if they're content with them and say, hey, if you go back there, it's likely to be less expensive because they can just pull up the old version and make the changes that are necessary and have you sign the new version. But it's likely that the most cost-effective way for you to deal with it is to get a brand new one done.
So then we have to make out a whole new will.
Right, exactly. And the law has changed a little bit. Luckily, not a lot in terms of wills, but you want to make sure that the new will that you have, meets all of the new requirements for wills and estate planning. So it's a good way to get that all up to date as well.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very
thank
welcome.
You.
Mm-hmm. Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Good morning. I heard different attorneys' names on the radio this morning, and they say PC after the attorney's names.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
It stands for Professional Corporation. I'll give you a quick little summary of business law. Organizations can be a corporation, they can be a limited liability company, they can be a partnership, and the advantage for companies to be a corporation, so if you see, you know, Inc. after their name or LTD or corporation, that means that they have organized themselves with the state government, and that provides them certain rights, and one of them is liability protection. So if you go to a corporation and say, for instance, Coca-Cola, this is an example I use all the time. Say you own stock in Coca-Cola and Coca-Cola gets sued because somebody finds, you know, something bad in a can of Coca-Cola. As a stockholder of Coca-Cola, are you worried that they're going to be coming and taking your house and your assets because Coca-Cola got sued? No, you're not, because as just an owner of the company, you're not directly responsible for the liabilities of that company. And the same thing is true for small companies. You know, Ace Paving Incorporated, the owners of Ace Paving are not necessarily responsible directly for the liabilities of Ace Paving. They don't have to worry about losing their house or their retirement funds. So a lot of companies are set up that way. But there are some exceptions, and it is for professions. It's for doctors, for lawyers, for accountants, for architects. We are allowed to organize ourselves as corporations, but we are not allowed to protect ourselves from the liability that may be created by acting as a professional. So I can be set up as a PC, and matter of fact, I'm set up as a professional limited liability company, but if you sued me over something that I did as an attorney, I cannot protect myself from that the same way that Ace Paving can if somebody sues them. Does that make sense?
Sort of.
It is essentially what the reasoning behind it is that supposedly doctors, lawyers, accountants, and architects and other professionals are supposed to be so professional that we should not want to protect ourselves from that liability. We should be willing to stand behind the work that we do and not hide behind a corporation, essentially. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is I have two different companies, actually. I have Central Park Law, PLLC, which is my law practice. I also have Central Park Ventures, which owns the building that I operate in. And so if you came and slipped and fell on my walk coming into my office, I would be protected from liability for that. You couldn't get my house if that were the case. But if I committed malpractice, my house is not protected.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I think I may have just confused her.
I think you can incorporate as an individual too, can't you?
You can. You're still are required to be a responsible citizen within
right.
the community. You can't say, "Oh, I'm going to set up a corporation and put my car in it and not have insurance." You're not allowed
mm-hmm.
to do that.
Okay, got a call. Good morning. You're on the line with Nathan.
Good morning, Duke. Thanks for taking my call. The previous discussion brought to mind a question that I have. If he were to sign any document on behalf of his LLC or PC,
mm-hmm.
or perhaps on behalf of a trust,
mm-hmm.
Would it have to be signed as a trustee or as a resident agent or
It's a very, very important question, if, especially if you're acting in any one of those roles. You want to make sure that if you are signing on behalf of the corporation, that the document says that, and that you're not signing to be personally responsible for that. And we generally make those distinctions on the documents, and you'll see it underneath the signatures on a lot of those contracts. You know, signing, you know, this person is signing, and they, you know, by this person as a member or as a president or as the vice president, so that they're saying, I'm doing this on behalf of the company, not for me individually.
Yeah, the reason I asked the question, I belong to a neighborhood association,
mm-hmm.
and our bylaws were due to expire in March of 2014 this year,
mm-hmm.
and a number of the properties in the association are owned by trusts.
Yes.
And there's also couple properties owned by LLCs.
Mm-hmm.
And all the signatories on those particular documents, when they signed the ballots, they signed only as individuals and not as trustees and not as resident agents.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, are those signatures binding?
Maybe, maybe not. I mean, that's the best answer I can give you, because I haven't seen any of the documentation, but they should be signing on behalf of the LLC, or they should be signing on behalf of the trust and not individually.
Okay, now I did go to an attorney and get his opinion on it.
Mm-hmm.
However, his opinion was simply verbal.
Yep.
And I asked him to provide cites, cases, so that if I got into any discussion in that regard, I would be able to cite this particular case. I mean, Brown v. Mm-hmm. Ottawa County,
yep.
What have you. And that information was not provided. However, a bill was.
And we're out of time for right now. Thank you, sir.
You bet.
Thank you.
And thank you, Nathan, for being our guest this morning here on Talk the Town.
A pleasure as always.
Filling us up with all the legal stuff.
I've got lots more.